everyone, welcome to Skype a Scientist Live. Today, we are super excited to be talking all about lizards. And if it weren't for the squid, I think lizards would be one of my favorite animals for sure. So I'm super excited for this session. I'm so glad that you're all here. And we're really, really lucky to have Chelsea Connor as our lizard expert for this session. Generally speaking, this is just going to be an open Q&A. So if you in the audience have any questions, don't be shy. Please submit your questions. You can do that using the Q&A function right at the bottom. Type questions in, and then we'll ask them throughout the next 45 minutes. Chelsea, thank you so much for joining us. Would you like to give us a little bit of an introduction of who you are, what you do, and why you like it?
Yeah. So, Sarah said, my name is Chelsea. I'm from the Commonwealth of Dominica. That's an island in the Caribbean. It's kind of like right in the middle. And I grew up there, and we have a lot of endemic species. That means they're only found on my island. And that's what got me into studying animals to begin with. And we also have a lot of really cool reptiles. So I've always loved reptiles. And then I got to come to Texas, where I am right now, and study biology. And my advisor was like, hey, do you want to do this cool anole research? I was like, I know those lizards. I grew up with them. So I went back home to do this research. And I like fell in love even more with this like specific group of lizards. So right now I'm just like, okay, this is it. This is what I want to do. I was originally into birds. I still am into birds. I have like a collection of bird books from back home as well. So I'm just a big animal lover all around, and I'm excited that I get to like work with them and teach other people about them.
That's awesome. I am an animal lover too, so I always love it when we have animal sessions. We already have questions coming in, so let's dive right into it. Karis wants to know, Chelsea, what got you into your field specifically?
So when I got here to Texas, I initially thought that, like, okay, I guess I can only work as a zookeeper. There's nothing wrong with working as a zookeeper. I was like really pumped about it too. And past experiences at the university that I transferred from, I was like, yeah, I think this is what's best for me. And then my advisor was like, you do realize you can do anything, right? Because I like talked to him about how I used to watch Steve Irwin on TV and all that. He's like, you can do that too. I was like, no, I can't. Because I didn't think that, like, I've never seen Black women in that field on TV. Yeah. Or like heard of them in that field ever before. So I was like, nah. And then like one day he said to me again, like, you can do whatever you want, honestly. And I sat there and I was like, I can. He's not wrong. I can do whatever I want. And he had been asking me to go do the anole research for a while. And I was like, you know what? I'll go ahead and go do it. And I went and did it. And I got to teach high school students about anoles while I was like collecting my data and everything. And I just like, it's like, oh, okay, I'm at home here. This is it for me.
That's so fantastic. All right, questions are coming in so fast. This is really awesome. So what does the lizard that you study, what does it look like?
Okay, so there's a wide range of variation between species, so it's hard for me to just like describe one and expect it to like fit a bunch of them. Right. A lot of them are green, a lot of them are brown, but then there are also so many that have different colors and patterns on them and mixtures of both of those that it's hard to like put them in a box. And that's why people study them, because of how wide their range of variation is. Like even within like one tree, there can be like several different species that naturally separate themselves at different levels and coexist mostly peacefully in that tree.
Cool.
For the most part, they are about like this big minus the tail. So I have a hard time like giving length, so I'm sorry about that.
Yay big feels right. I mean, like, I know what yay big means more than I know what, like, 5 inches means. I can see it.
Yeah.
That's great. So about how old can they get?
It depends on the species. The ones that I have back home, I think they get up to, like, 4 or 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I know some are very short-lived. There are some that live only a year. So they mature at like 5 or 6 months, and then the rest of their life is just like, okay, we need to have babies so we can make more of us. And there's some that have longer spans, and there's some that can live even longer in captivity with the right care.
Very cool. So what kind of training did you have to do to get into your field?
So my background is that I've done a couple of zoology courses, animal anatomy courses and all that, but specifically for the handling of these lizards. To be honest, my advisor was like, I feel like you know this, like you can pick this up really quickly. So here's how to lasso a lizard. Great, you got it. You know not to hold them by their tails. Perfect. Well, I talked to the figure the rest out and he left. I was like, oh, okay. And I did figure it out. You want to be gentle with them. You don't want to stress them out. So you can hold them by a leg. They won't drop their leg, like they'll drop their tail to escape. And they do need to keep their tails because that's an important way to escape from predators. So to hold them by their legs. If they're getting really stressed out, you can see like they're breathing really hard, then it's best that you get done really quickly and let them go so that they can run off and be safe and calm down and all of that.
Cool.
You don't have anything on your hands because a lot of reptiles and amphibians breathe through their skin. So you don't want to put anything on them that's going to affect them in that way.
That is super important. Thanks for telling us. So could you tell us a little bit more about the lassoing process? That sounds super fun.
Yeah. So it's basically like a loop of wire on a fishing pole. And you can extend the fishing pole as long as you need. So the lizard's all the way up in a tree. It's really easy to reach it. And you get the loop around its head. And this sounds a little bit scary, but it's not. It doesn't hurt them. You have to pull quickly. And it just like surprises them and takes them out of the tree, but it doesn't hurt them because it's just like their own weight. So they're like, what's happening? I'm not touching anything. This is weird. And then when you get your hand, like get them on your hand, They're like, oh, okay, I'm back on the ground. What is happening again?
Totally.
So it's kind of like having them on a leash.
That sounds so cool. So Brody from Illinois wants to know, is being a scientist fun?
It is. It is tons of fun. It's also a lot of hard work, but when you're doing something that you like doing, it makes doing the hard work easier.
Awesome. Excellent answer. Both fun and hard, but sometimes the hard part is also kind of fun. That's like something you don't always hear. You think hard means not fun, but solving puzzles is fun. So
I love puzzles. They're like one of my favorite things to do.
Exactly. Awesome. So we've got a question from, I think, somebody who must have been paying attention to you on Twitter. What is a dewlap and what are they used for?
So dewlaps are these... it's kind of like a fleshy projection. It's like a flap of skin under the necks of the lizards. And with anoles, they're able to retract and expand. So they're able to like pull them in and out on command. And they use them to ward off other males from their territory. So they'll combine that with like push-ups. So they'll be doing like push-ups and flashing their dewlaps. And they'll also do that to attract females as well. So it's for mating, and it's to tell other males to like, hey, this is my house. Please don't come into my house.
Awesome. I think one thing I learned from following you on Twitter, like how many colors dewlaps can be. They're so bright and so beautiful. And so for anyone watching at home, like Google image search dewlaps. They're so stunning.
They're amazing. Really cool. There's a lot of like pattern variation too, like even within one species, they can have two or three different patterns for their dewlap.
That's really cool. So Benjamin wants to know, does anyone eat lizards? Like, do birds eat lizards? Do lizards eat lizards? Do people eat lizards?
So starting with lizards, there are a lot of anoles that eat other anoles. As long as it's smaller than them, they're definitely going to go ahead and try it. They're usually, from my experience, the more aggressive species of anoles. Like the invasive species on my island, the other one that I'm studying, is a pretty aggressive anole, and it tends to eat its own young, or it will eat the young of the native anole. Birds eat lizards. Snakes as well eat the anoles. And I'm sure that there have been people who have eaten the anoles. I don't know any, but I don't see why not, honestly.
In a pinch, why not?
Iguana, and it's not bad. I'm sorry. It's not terrible. I would try it again, just because, like, it's not something that I'd, like, willingly look out for, but it's not terrible.
And they're invasive in Florida, right? So we're trying to get rid of those iguanas.
Yeah.
So killing two birds with one stone. Cool. So Carly wants to know, why do some lizards have spikes on their backs?
So that's a good question. And I'm not entirely sure the answer. It could be just a display feature or something to make, like, something to make them look more intimidating to other males or more attractive to other females. But I don't find a lot of information about the spikes on my lizards, and I've never read a lot about that.
Yeah, sounds good. Let's see. So what does an anole eat?
So a lot of anoles eat insects, mainly insects, but there are some that eat fruit, some that eat nectar. Like the green anole that is found here in America, it's native to America, they eat nectar. And some anoles, like I said, they will eat other anoles, but they also eat other lizards like geckos. And some of them will also, there was a Cuban night anole, which is the largest known anole. It was found eating a bird.
Whoa.
Yeah, there's a picture of it on Anole Annals. Which is like the Anole website that I'm also a contributor of. And there's a picture of it, like, just the bird is in its mouth. There's like feathers and legs sticking out.
Wow. That's a pretty tough lizard. That's really cool. The Woodland family would like to know, are any anoles poisonous?
No, not that I know of. I know that, like, if you handle an anole, you don't wash your hands and you touch your food, you can get salmonella, so don't do that.
Good to know. Good to know.
No, there's no poisonous or venomous anoles.
Okay, great. So we don't need to be afraid of an anole. That's excellent news.
Yeah. No, they're fine. They will get upset sometimes when you, like, hold them and they'll, like, try to bite you. But it's like a clothespin, like, on your finger. It's like, oh, you got me.
That's great. So where is a good place that people can observe lizards in the wild? So maybe if we live in urban environments, like, do you have any tips for people to find lizards in their backyards or in their neighborhoods?
Yeah. So if you're in an urban environment looking for lizards, depending on how hot it gets that day, like in the middle of summer in Texas, I know that the lizards are not going to be out at noon because that's too hot. Even they get too hot. So they'll be out sometime, like, earlier in the morning, or they'll be out later in the day when the sun is setting, but it's still kind of warm. And they like to bask on something that is fairly open so that they can get the sunlight, but also where they have, like, a good lookout at what's going to come to them. So those places are usually rocks. They're usually on a rock, or if it's a tree climbing lizard, it's going to be on the side of a tree that the sun hits. A lot of them have really good camouflage, so it might take you a while to spot it, but that's, like, part of the fun as well. If you've ever played Aaron's Find That Lizard, you know that finding the lizard is, like, half of the challenge, because they enjoy hiding. They are built for that.
That's really cool. You're
out in the wild, again, like, they like to be on rocks, but some of them do hide in the sand. Those are really hard to spot, especially those that are specialized, like, dig in the sand and live there. They have, like, burrows in there. It's really hard to, like, figure out where they'll be. But, like, in your backyard, you're going to want to look on the rocks. If it's the middle of the day, they're going to be most likely under those rocks. And if you flip a rock to look for a herp, Remember to flip it towards you so that whatever is under it can run that way. And it's not coming towards you in case it's like something that could hurt you or bite. You don't want it to come for you. And then always put the rock back where it was, because that's its home and you want it to come back to its home.
That is solid advice. I will start doing that with the logs that I flip up in the Northeast. I always put them back, but I did not know the tip about tilting them toward yourself, not away from yourself. So what are you, like, what questions are you specifically answering in your work?
So I'm looking at the dietary niche overlap between the native anole and the invasive anole on my island. So what that is that because the anole back home is endemic, it's only found there, we want to make sure that it survives with a lizard that's invasive that came in and appears to be taking up its usual spots. We want to know, okay, well, are they out? Is it out competing the native anole? And that means, like, is it fighting with it for food and winning, or is it fighting with it for other resources and winning? And food is the most important question. It has to eat to survive. So what I'm looking at is, are they eating the same things? And is the competition happening between them for prey items? And so far we found that they don't have a lot of similarity in their diets, which is good, which means Great. That they're finding different insects to eat. They're happy eating different insects. That could have something to do with their ecomorph. And ecomorph is the fancy name for, remember when I talked earlier about how they live at different levels in the tree? That's a fancy name for those body types that are adapted for different habitats. So an anole that is adapted to live like on the trunk of a tree is called a trunk anole. And that's where its body type is best suited for. If it lives in the grass and bush, it's called a grass bush anole. It's really simple.
I love when science words say exactly what they mean.
Yeah, I love it.
That's
so great.
That's wonderful. Super cool. Okay, so we've got a question here about lizard regeneration. We know that geckos can drop their tails and some geckos can grow them back. First of all, do anoles grow their tails back if they lose them? And if so, generally, like, how do lizards even do that?
So anoles definitely can grow their tails back. That's why we're always careful not to touch their tails or handle their tails when we're catching them or holding them. I did have a student that accidentally caught a anole by its tail. It ran through her loop, like right as she was pulling it, and it like got the tail and it was like, okay, bye. And it dropped the tail and left. And so she was so upset. She's like, but it can't use it now if it needs to get away. So I was like, but it did get away. It got away from you. So use it.
Oh man, poor lizard. That's really cool.
As far as how they grow them back, I'm not sure how to answer that.
Cool. I know it's something stem cell something, but I don't know anything. Yeah. cool. So a fourth grade class from Iowa wants to know, do you have to hurt the lizards to study them?
No, my research doesn't involve anything that harms the anoles at all. They are a little bit upset with me because I have to take their cloacal temperature, and what a cloaca is, that's where they poop from. So I have to put a thermometer in their butts, and they're not very happy about that. I can see on their faces that they don't like it.
I wouldn't like that.
All my dignity is gone. Yep. My friends saw that. and I also have to collect poop. So sometimes I have to massage their tummies so that they poop, that so I can get the sample and go, because that's how I figure out what they eat. I collect their poop.
Sounds good. I didn't know that you can massage a lizard to get it to poop. So you never know when you're going to need that information. You know, you never know that's going to come in handy. That's great. So let's see. Do you personally have any lizards as pets?
I do. I have a chameleon. She's just over there in her tank, and she is letting me know that she was not happy with the amount of mealworms I gave her this morning.
She wants more mealworms?
Yes. But she already got her recommended amount. I can go get her.
Go get her. Yeah. Sorry, my dad just tried to call in the middle of the session. I'll talk to my dad after.
Are you unhappy still? She's still unhappy.
Here she is.
She's so cute.
Chameleon. Her name is Fajita.
Oh my god. That's so cool.
She enjoys climbing everything.
What's the deal with their, like, mitten hands?
Oh, that helps them to hold on to surfaces, like branches and twigs. Their claws are also really, really sharp.
Wow.
To help with, like, holding on to things. You can see it.
Yeah. Wow.
That's and super they cool. have prehensile tails as well.
So their tails don't fall off. Is that right?
No. Because yeah. they need them to hold on to things while they're climbing. Wow. It's also like a safety net in case they like lose grip on their hands, they're holding on to their tails.
Chameleons are so cool. I was talking to a scientist named Kelly Diamond, and she was telling me that in Florida they're invasive, and so people will put them on a tree and that like they don't really move much in their lives, and so they can go back like, I don't know, a year later and kind of harvest the chameleons because they don't move very far. And that blew my mind. I could not believe.
Yeah.
That was something. I mean, that's not a good thing and we should not be doing
no.
that. It's really, really bad.
Florida has actually several species of chameleons because they were pets and people released them. So there's, I know they have Jackson's chameleons, they have panther chameleons, they have veiled chameleons. So there's at least three, but I know there's more than three species of chameleons. Yeah. have. I'm not sure how many. And there's a lot of other animals that are in Florida because people release their pets. If you have a captive reptile, even if you did catch it in the wild originally, if it's been your pet for a while, don't release it into the wild. It could have like parasites or something, or some other thing that you're unaware of that could affect the native population. And it could also be in an area where it's not supposed to be at all.
Yeah, that's really important. So what are the easiest parts of your job and the hardest parts of your job?
The easiest part is catching the anoles, talking to people about anoles. I also draw them for fun. Those are the easy parts. The hard parts is doing the DNA sequencing from the poop samples and writing. Because I'm trying to write a paper and it's really hard, like putting it in the proper format, finding all the words, looking at this data and going, okay, how can we put this in a way that people can understand it? It's hard.
Yeah, it is so hard. That's the hardest part of being a scientist, I think, for most scientists, for sure. Mrs. Gresko's fifth grade class wants to know, do anoles live alone or do they live in groups?
So most anoles do live somewhat alone. So they'll have like their little territory and there can be nearby anoles, but they have their specific areas. There are some species that have females that have communal nests. That means they lay their eggs together. So they'll find a spot and they'll just all lay their eggs right there. But for the most part, they are like somewhat solitary. They don't have like packs like wolves do or like other, like some mammals have, but they're also not completely solitary.
Cool. Could you tell us a little bit more about anole eggs? Are they like bird eggs where they're kind of hard, or are they like snake eggs where they're kind of like leathery?
So they are a little bit hard, and they're pretty small, they're pretty tiny, and they lay them in the soil. So they'll like dig a little like spot and they'll lay them and cover it up. And then tiny anole pops out a couple weeks later. I don't remember exactly how long it takes for the egg to hatch. Sometimes people do end up finding anoles in like potting soil that they get from places because the anoles sneak in and they lay their eggs in there. Or like plants that they got, like they get a potted plant from like Florida and yeah. All of a sudden, there's little anole on it because it was, like, in the dirt this whole time.
Right. Oh, man. That's a added bonus to getting Floridian plants. That's really fun. So what does a typical day in your field look like?
Typical day. So if I was back home collecting data for my research, it would be I wake up and I had a tent, so I was like camping in the jungle. Wake up in my tent, get ready, make sure that I have all the tools that I need. So I have like a field fanny pack, and I have my thermometer. I make sure I have my lasso and extra wire, because I have to show the students how to tie it. And also, in case I need to tie a new one myself, I have scissors, I have pen and paper, also my phone to take pictures and take pictures of the data periodically as well, because sometimes it starts to rain randomly and paper gets wet. You don't want to lose your data. So I like drive to the location, or if we're staying right around camp, then we do that, and we pick a spot and we walk over to it, and looking for anoles, you take your time and you look back and forth, because again, they're really good at camouflaging, so you want to make sure that you look at the area properly.
Mm-hmm.
And you try your best to see if you can spot any anoles that are in there. Some days you need like a lot of them, so you have to like, okay, I need to find every single anole in this area. And then some days it's like, oh, I don't need that many. We can just have a more chill walk around. Some of them are in like really difficult spots to get, so you have to like explain to the students how to reach them, or try to reach them yourself. Once you catch them, and you measure their length. And with lizards, we measure snout to vent length, because most lizard species can drop their tail. So if you measure the tail length, that won't always give you a consistent result as you go through collecting other specimens. So snout to vent length is from the tip of its nose down to its cloaca. So that's just its body.
Cool.
Get its temperature, get the temperature of where it was like sitting, because it's important to know like what temperatures do they prefer, and then temperature of the day, and try to get that sample out of them, try to massage the poop out of them. Sometimes they'll poop immediately because they're scared and they're like, please leave me alone, I taste bad. I poop. Collect that and you put it in a little vial, and you make sure that they have a number. Take a picture of the lizard as well, and also like name it with that number, because you want to keep it consistent all the way through. You want to make sure this lizard information is recorded with its number, and put the lizard back.
Cool. Right where it comes. So how do you know whether you've caught a lizard before? Do you like tag them in some way, or do you just like know a lizard when you see one?
So for my research, it was not necessary that I tag the anole, so I don't catch the same one twice. I was just looking at what they were eating. I wasn't looking at anything specific to one individual anole.
Right.
If I was, one of the ways that we mark them is by clipping a toe, and the toes do grow back as well. So that's why that's a recommended method of tagging them. There's also lizard safe paint that you can use to mark them. It shouldn't affect their ability to camouflage naturally too much, but if you catch it and you look at it, you should be able to go, oh, okay, there's the paint on it. That's one I've caught before.
That's really cool. And how long does the paint stay on them?
I'm not sure how long it stays on. I think should be more than a couple of weeks.
Okay, but like long enough for it to work.
Long enough for you, like while you're conducting the research, but not too long that's gonna be on them. Super long after.
Yeah, like tattooing these lizards for life. Cool. Cool. So Victoria wants to know, do anoles only live in warm climates, and can we find them in the northeast of the US?
So anoles are tropical and subtropical lizards. So those are the only regions where they're found, close to the equator. If you do find them in the northeast, it is completely accidental. It is they've gotten there from Florida by accident, and they don't mean to be there.
Right.
The winters will be difficult for them, and they may not survive.
Fair enough. If you live in the Northeast and you like lizards, though, just look in the spring and like early summer for salamanders, because they are all over the place. We have some of the like highest amount of salamanders anywhere in the world, from like the Appalachians up through, I don't know how far north they go, to be honest, but I know they're in Connecticut. So if you're a lizard person, we are very fortunate in how many salamanders we have. The Woodland family would like to know, does your chameleon change colors?
She does. Right now, she's pretty chill. Like, this is her chill color. She's not bothered by anything right now, so she's not going to change color. If she was mad at me, she would have darkened up, and you would see patterns appear on her sides here.
Whoa, that's cool.
Yeah, and they also do have specific, because she's a female, she has specific coloring for when she's gravid. That's what we call it when lizards are pregnant.
Uh-huh.
But right now, she's just pretty calm. She has nothing going on. She's just like, oh, okay, we're climbing. So
that's cool. How can you tell a male and female lizard apart?
It depends on the species. So for anoles, from species to species, there's different things to look for. Some males have bigger heads. Some species, only the male has a dewlap. In species where both of them have a dewlap, the male is going to have the bigger and brighter dewlap. So that's something to look for. In lizards like chameleons here, like Fajita, who doesn't want to come off my shirt, she has a thin tail here.
Uh-huh.
Males have thicker tail bases because of the hemipen. It's like tucked into there, so it makes it thicker.
Uh-huh. And
so she would have these spurs on the back of her foot if she was a male.
Wow.
And that's for a chameleon specifically, for this species of chameleon.
Right.
She doesn't have either of those. And her casque is pretty small. The males have larger casques. They also have more vibrant colors because they need them for like warding off males and courting females.
That's super cool. Awesome. Thanks. Here's a question from Rose. Lizards are so cool. Do you have any favorite books, podcasts, documentaries, or any other resources on lizards that you'd recommend?
That's a really good question. Currently, my favorite book, it's not specifically about anoles, but it includes anoles. It's The Reptiles and Amphibians of Mindo. So this is a list of the reptiles and amphibians you can find in Mindo, Ecuador, and it's written by some herpetologists from the website tropicalherping.com. Mm-hmm. And they do a lot of tours when it's safe to. They do a lot of tours to show people the different reptiles and amphibians in different parts of the world, particularly in South America, and that helps them fund research that they do about these reptiles and amphibians as well. So they have a lot of information that they found and a lot of observations that they've made about them that they were able to collect into different books and papers and posters. They even have field guides. So right now that's one of my favorites. Another one of my favorites is The Reptiles and Amphibians of the Caribbean, because
that's where you live. Cool. Curious wants to know, do you have any advice for anyone considering your field or anything that you wish you knew when you were younger?
I wish I knew that I could do whatever I want to do. I wish I knew that sooner. It clearly hasn't stopped me because I'm still here, but I think knowing it sooner would have taken me down the path a lot sooner. But everything happens like it's supposed to. So me being here right now is part of the universe's plan, and that's okay. But I want you to know that you can do anything that you want to do. You can be anyone you want to be. So if you want to be a herpetologist, you can definitely go for it. It starts as simply as reading up as much as you can about a particular reptile or amphibian that you like. Trying to go find them, looking at videos about them, and don't worry about like, oh, I don't know what this is, I don't know what that is. As you saw, there's things that I don't know, or questions that I don't know how to answer, how to format that, and that's perfectly okay.
That's right. I've been studying squid for like almost 15 years, and there's still questions that I don't know either. We just like know one person knows everything. It's just not possible. So know what you can and go forward and be a scientist the best you can. We still have so many questions. This is so awesome. What are the basic responsibility of somebody who studies lizards, from like how to take care of them to other responsibilities?
So it varies from herpetologist to herpetologist, depending on their interests. There are herpetologists who know a lot about lizard care because their research requires that, or they have a lot of pet reptiles and they know what to do to take care of them. There are some that know basics of lizard care, and if they need help, they'll ask their advisor. That's me. I do enjoy having my lizard, and I've learned a lot about caring for her as well. It really is dependent on what you want to know and what your field is, what your research is. If you're looking at something that's husbandry related, that's raising and taking care of them, then of course you're going to know a lot about that. Or if that's just a side interest, then you will.
For sure. Let's see. So we've got another question. What is your favorite lizard that you've ever worked with?
It's going to have to be the Dominican Anole. I might be a little bit biased.
Yeah.
But it's the endemic anole from my island, and I'm going to say that is my favorite that I've worked with so far. So far, maybe it'll change, but I doubt it.
Great. Let's see. Are anoles territorial?
Yes. Yes, they are. That's a big reason why they have those dewlaps. And the males with the brighter color dewlaps are the ones that typically win. That's a good thing to have. Oh, look, she's starting to change color. She's getting...
Whoa! That's so cool. I know that's, like, not as extreme as it can get, but it's still pretty cool that that's happened.
I'm going to put her back in her tank while you're looking.
Okay, that sounds good. That sounds good. All right. There's still so many questions. I'm just trying to pick ones that haven't already been asked.
It's all...
We show lizards. Cool. So Diane would like to know, what like special skills do lizards have? Like, can they fly? Can they walk on water? Can they do anything? We know that they can change color. We know they can drop their tails. Those are both awesome. Is there anything else that we haven't talked about?
Yeah, so there are some lizards that can walk on water. Like, it's a basilisk lizard. It's called the Jesus lizard because of that ability. There are lizards that are capable of gliding. It's not flying per se, but they do have these like webbed appendages. I keep forgetting the name of it, but they can like jump out of a tree and glide. There's geckos that can do that as well. It's not as extreme as those flying dragons, as they're called. Uh-huh. They're like the gliding geckos. They have like smaller appendages under their, not appendages, they have smaller like fleshy projections under their arms, huh. Webbed toes to help them like just glide through. So it's not as fantastic as the flying dragons, but they are still pretty cool. And then we also have aquatic anoles. I'm sure there's other aquatic lizards, but I like anoles, so I know about the anoles. There's four species of aquatic anoles. And in particular, there's one that has this little bubble that's like attached to its head when it like dives underwater. And that's kind of acts like a scuba tank. So it can breathe underwater for a bit.
That's wild. I didn't know that. That's so cool. That's awesome. Okay, so the next question we have came in before the session started. So you're super interested and involved in science communication. So why is science communication so important to you?
It's important because I feel like everybody needs to know about the natural world, the world that they live in, and the organisms that exist in this world with them. A lot of the times, scientists do research and we put out papers and it's for other scientists and people don't understand it. because you don't work in this field doesn't mean that you shouldn't be able to understand what work we're doing. And it's really important to communicate to people in a way that everybody can understand. Like, hey, here is, for example, here's a lizard that I found, and here's why this lizard is interesting. Here's what's cool about it. Here's how it affects its ecosystem. Here's why it's important in its ecosystem. And the more that you know about something, the more likely you are to care about it as well. So giving people that information is really powerful. And it also helps spark curiosity and interest. Because then once you found out about this one thing, you're like, okay, well then, how many other things are like this? How many other things contribute to this effect? Or how many things are able to take part in this? You have a lot of questions that follow up. And that curiosity helps keep you going and helps keep you interested in things. And it helps you to go, okay, well, now I would like to protect this. I would like to learn more. I want to tell people about it. And then you share the information that you know.
Yeah.
So having the right information as well helps you share it better, especially when you give it in a way that is easy to understand, then it's easier to share as well.
I completely agree. That's really awesome. Thank you. One last question before we do our like final questions here, because we try to keep them to be these sessions about 45 minutes and we have filled it without any problem. Is climate change affecting lizards at all?
Yes, climate change is affecting lizards. Going back to what I said earlier, we're in Texas in the middle of summer. They won't come out at noon because that's way too hot for them. The increasing temperatures is making it harder for them to have times when they can come out, especially with animals that need to hunt. Some reptiles and amphibians are ambush predators. That means they sit and wait for something to come to them, but others go out and look for things. If it's at a temperature where they can't go out and look for it, then they're more likely to starve or go out in an unfavorable condition and then get harmed because of it. Also with the longer winter periods, those are harmful to reptiles and amphibians as well because they're cold-blooded and they need those periods of warmth to come out and be at an active temperature, as we call it. That's temperature that they need to be at where they can perform normal bodily functions. So they can go out and find food, they can go out and walk, they can go out and find a mate. If they're not at those temperatures, then it's difficult to do any of those things.
Yeah, for sure.
There are some, there is the possibility to adapt to it, but with a lot of species, adapting takes a long time.
Yep. Climate change is scary. If you're over 18, vote in November, please, as one thing you can do. Okay, so we are at our final questions for the session. We've got two questions that are semi-related. The first question is, if you had the attention of everyone in the world and you could tell them one thing about lizards, what do you want everybody in the world to know about lizards?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I want everybody to know that anoles are the best lizards, point blank, period. That's it.
Great. Okay.
Sounds good. You don't need any other lizard fact other than that one. That's it.
Anoles are the best. All right. Sounds good. Don't let Fajita hear you say that, but we'll just, you know.
No, she's busy looking for more mealworms. She didn't
hear. Okay. Good. She wasn't paying attention. Good. And then the second question is, if you had, again, you still have everybody's attention in the whole world, and you tell them one thing about literally anything, it can be as big picture and serious or small and silly as you'd like, what do you want everybody in the world to know?
That's a really good question, and I'm gonna go with you can save our planet. That's you and small actions you do every day can help save our planet. We're in the middle of a climate crisis and we're still at a point where it is somewhat reversible, where we can fix some of the damage done and we can save this planet and everything that lives on it, including us. And we definitely need to do that. It is vital. It's not something that we can keep brushing aside. As convenient as some things are, like plastics and Driving your own car everywhere, as convenient as those are, there are so many small steps that you can take to lower your emissions and your carbon footprint that'll help. Even as small as just like bringing your backpack to the grocery store. I've always bring my backpack and a tote bag to the grocery store. And I've like drastically reduced the amount of plastic bags in my cupboard. I used to have a cupboard like full of plastic bags, a ton of plastic bags. And then I was like, okay, no, I can't do that. And I brought them into the store to recycle because they have a box where it's like bringing your plastic back to recycle. Brought them in and just started taking my backpack. Sometimes it's a little bit hard to remember that, but as you keep doing it, it's going to become a habit.
Great. That is a beautiful thing to end on. Before we officially wrap up, do you have anything that you'd like to plug? Do you have anywhere we can find you on social media? Anything else you'd like to say to our audience?
Yeah, so if you have decided you love Anoles or you still need some convincing, you can check me out on Twitter at Chelsea Herps or on Instagram at Out to Chelsea. I'm sorry that they're both different. I didn't realize that I would need them to be the same.
And we've linked on Skype a Scientist, Instagram, and Twitter. We have Chelsea tagged all over the place. So you can always go there and look at that too. So follow Chelsea on both of those things.
And also, if you are really into Anoles and soon other reptiles, because I'm planning on adding other stuff, you can check out my Redbubble store. It's chelseaherps.redbubble.com. Right now I have a bunch of Anole stickers. I have a green Anole that's voguing. That is really cool. And then a lot of my, like all my other stickers currently are Anoles of popsicles, and those popsicles are representations of their dewlap colors and patterns. So they are as accurate as I can make them for a popsicle. And their names are on them and everything, so you know what Anole you're looking at. And I plan to add other reptiles in there soon and more Dewpop Anole stickers.
Awesome. Well, Chelsea, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today. I learned so much about lizards, and I already liked lizards a lot, so this was so fun to have you on. And I also learned that the sign language for Vogue is yeah. So that's really great. Thank you, Erin, for signing.
Wait, it's this?
Yeah. Can you do it for us one more time? Yeah, that's great. Okay, so yeah, thanks for joining us today. We are going to be back here same time on Thursday to talk about artificial intelligence, and Janelle Shane will be the one speaking with us. She wrote a book called You Look Like a Thing and I Love You, which is the output from when she fed a machine learning algorithm with a bunch of different pickup lines, and what it spit out was "You look like a thing and I love you." And it's all about machine learning and artificial intelligence, and she's super funny. She's got a blog all about artificial intelligence, and that is going to be a fun session as well. If you loved today's session and you'd like more people to hear about it, we post all of these on YouTube afterward and also on our like audio feed podcast. So if you look for Skype a Scientist in your podcast feed, you'll see all of the sessions that we've had there. So this will go forward and more people can check it out. So thank you again for joining us. Thank you, Erin, for signing. Thank you, Chelsea, for taking the time. And we'll
thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem. So happy to have you. All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.